What is up, everybody, and welcome to another riveting episode of Uncanny, the unofficial X-Men 97 podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Condon, and today we're going to be going over what I think is the most influential, emotional, and gripping episode of this reissued series so far, episode 5, entitled Remember It. Now, as a forewarning, there is a lot going on in this episode. It is not a filler episode. It is not a Monster of the Week episode. This is high drama, high stakes, and I literally spent 30 minutes on my lunch break crying after watching this episode. All right, so spoiler alert ahead. If you don't want spoilers, please watch the episode and then listen to the podcast. I'm going to go under the assumption that you have watched the episode in 1, 2, 3. Okay, let's just hug. Can we all hug? I'm going to hug you. We're just going to do a little. Okay. It's okay. It's okay. All right. Whew. Okay. Yeah. So this is a difficult one. There's a lot going on in this episode, and I just have to applaud Marvel Studios for basically blowing over all the expectations I had on this series with this one episode. I kind of saw this coming. Anyone who read the comics understands what happened in this mutant nation. And they did not sugarcoat it. They went there 100% and borrowed actually from a lot of contemporary storylines that were occurring in the comic book universe for X-Men up and until about a year ago, which I'm going to go into. Again, spoilers ahead, and let's go. So one thing I also recommend is when you're watching this series, do not skip the credits, the intro credits. Every single time they run the intro credits, the opener, you see different stuff. And if you just click skip, you're missing a lot of subtext to the episode as you're going into it. Again, I think what they've done with this is genius. Changing up the introduction every single episode to introduce characters and introduce subplots to help the audience understand what's going on. So I'm going to break a little bit of those down because there's a lot going on. So at a minute 37 into the opening credit, we see Cable fighting Apocalypse, or Ensabinur, as in the comics, Apocalypse is called, who is an ancient mutant, the first mutant, or one of the first two mutants, who's basically been alive for a very long time, since before the Pharaohs. And he, in this scene, really quick, is fighting Cable, right? So Cable is a mutant who appeared in the original 97 series, and of course in the comics, who is Nathan Christopher Summers. Now, there is another Nathan Summers in this animation reboot. Again, it's the same guy. We're just going to call him Nathan Charles and not Nathan Christopher. Charles is my middle name too. I'm going to go with that. So we see Nathan as an adult fighting Apocalypse in this flash forward or flashback. You can call it whatever you want. It's information, right? A little bit farther into the intro, we see Callisto. She's the one with the eye patch. She was the leader of the Morlocks, who we see in the episode as we get towards the end of the episode a little bit. And Storm, in the comics and in the original 97 series, fights Callisto for the title of leader of the Morlocks. Now, the Morlocks are mutants who live in the sewers of Manhattan because they are physically very obviously mutants, right? They look different than humans. They're green. They have, you know, extra arms. They are, you know, misshapen faces, you know, tricolored, you know, facial features. They just look so different that they went into hiding, right? They were otherized, to use the term from social science, so much that they have to live in the sewers. And the Morlocks are introduced early in this reboot when Magneto descends into the sewers of Manhattan in the second to third episode and saves them from the Friends of Humanity. Now, in this very quick cutscene, we see that Storm and Callisto fought, with Storm winning. Again, that's an Easter egg from the original 97 series and in the comics to say that the X-Men, namely Storm, have a deep history with the Morlocks. Though we don't see Storm in this episode, nor do we see Forge. You know, we may have to unpack that in a different episode after this one. But this episode, ugh, so much. We also get to see in the introduction a manufactured flashback of Gambit and Nightcrawler fighting Friends of Humanity. And we get to see hear the quintessential BAMF sound that Kurt or Nightcrawler makes when he teleports. It's the vacuum of air. BAMF. Again, Nightcrawler, Kurt Wagner, a German mutant who was a part of the second major iteration of X-Men to include Storm and Colossus. And in the 97 series, he was introduced in a little different way when Wolverine and Rogue go to the Alps and are visiting a monastery, and he's there as a priest. So we have a glimpse of him. Now, after the introduction starts, we are brought in a very unique way in what I like to call in the industry a news package. So a news package is like a micro documentary that a journalist will do on a certain subject matter. And a package will usually run for about maybe 5 to 10 to 15 minutes as a featurette in a news broadcast. And in the 90s, any news that was broadcasted on television screens across the country was done in the aspect ratio of 4:3. So, you know, you have a little nod back to pre-HD TV 1920x1080 and previous to that, 720 resolution, 4:3. So we see a news reporter doing a special piece on the X-Men at the Xavier Mansion. And we also hear from this news piece that, yes, Genosha was recognized by the United Nations as a nation, as a place where people can gather and be recognized as a people protected under international law. Okay. As we go to Genosha, we hear some music playing as a couple people visit Genosha on a mission. One of them has been called, Magneto, was called by the UN to visit Genosha for a reason that he doesn't know. Well, who goes with him? Rogue. And who tags along? Remy LeBeau or Gambit. A little love triangle going on there. Very apt and very interesting. And we hear this Afro-Caribbean music, right? So Genosha is an island. And by the music and by the foliage, we are to believe in this context that it is an Afro-Caribbean island, right? So that music has a meaning. We also see some characters from the X-Men series that we haven't seen in the 97 series so far, namely Pixie, a really cool character. We see Glob Herman. He's the guy that you can see his bones. He's kind of like a big glob guy. We see Leech. We see a couple other mutants. And we see some signage, right? As the Blackbird, which is the plane that the X-Men fly on, is flying into Genosha, we see signs that say, "Welcome, X-Men," and more importantly, "Magneto was right." All right, again, this is something to think about. What was Magneto's whole thing? To be more violent and to be more aggressive in his fight for mutant rights and equality. All right, so the people that are living in Genosha sort of see Magneto as a folk hero. Right, like a more extreme Robin Hood, not as a terrorist. So even though he's, designated as a terrorist by the humans, the mutants, or many of them, not really the X-Men, see him sort of like a folk hero, right? Someone who is fighting for their rights. So we see a couple new X-Men introduced here, namely other X-Men who are not a part of the team, quote-unquote, in this series, with Nightcrawler, who is my favorite character, by the way. I just love him. So Kurt Wagner, a.k.a. Nightcrawler, is introduced as a faith relations liaison. So cool. That's literally kind of what I do a little bit. Interfaith dialogue. I work at an NGO and work on interfaith dialogue and communications. And Nightcrawler has been invited by the Genosians to act as a faith relations liaison. So cool. I love seeing that. And I love how they've animated Nightcrawler as a more happy-go-lucky, acrobatic, and very elusive and aloof character, right? Like a little elf. That's technically how Nightcrawler was animated in the comics, and I love the youthful energy they brought to the character versus how the character was introduced initially in the 97 run. Now, again, I think this is the best episode so far in the series. I don't want to nitpick, but technically, in season 3 or 4 of the 97 series, Nightcrawler was brought back as a returning character in a major development where Rogue and Nightcrawler are directly associated as step siblings. Like, Mystique was an adopted mother to Rogue, and Mystique is the mother of Nightcrawler. And in the later part of the original 97 run, there is an episode where these family ties, I even think that was the name of the episode, are revealed. So, technically speaking, Nightcrawler and Rogue would very much have bonded over this sibling connection. So when Rogue wonders, oh, how have you been since the monastery? That dialogue doesn't really make sense in continuity, but I digress. The episode was absolutely fantastic. I just think, you know, it would have been nice to do that, but I guess it's too much unpacking for those who haven't watched the original series. So we go in and see a number of other cameos. We have Multiple Man, or Jamie Madrix. He's the one that can make multiple copies of himself. We have Exodus doing some interesting stuff with phasing, though he's kind of more like a psychic mutant that channels faith into energy. I digress. We see Allison Blair as Dazzler, which I love to see, and then a little connection that Dazzler and Nightcrawler have later on in the episode, which, again, is based in the comics. They had a relationship a little bit. We see Boom Boom, character that has kind of like the 1980s look with the glasses. And then we get some interesting dialogue between Gambit, Nightcrawler, and Rogue. Some of the most impressive dialogue and impressive writing I've seen so far in the series, with some very quotable moments, like when Remy and Kurt are talking to each other. And Kurt says to Remy, or Gambit, "There is no love without sin. Love is measured by what we forgive." Beautiful. And this would make sense as Kurt is Catholic, and his religious beliefs inform a lot of his worldview. So his advice to Remy would be religiously based, but he's also very tongue-in-cheek, making fun of American dramatic sentimentality. You know, you can't just go up to a woman and tell her how you feel. Everything has to be like a soap opera. Again, that, for me, was really nice to see, because Kurt, in the comics, was always more of a goofball. Like, he was always more of a jokester, like to poke fun at people, play tricks on people. So this was nice to see. We see Jean a little bit later at the mansion with Beast and Scott, kind of hiding from this reporter doing the interview, and something very interesting happens, right? We see Jean kind of parting the waters and holding them back, you know, very akin to what occurred in the Torah, or in the Bible, basically holding waters back and you know, from coming on the ground, very emblematic and symbolic of those moments. And we hear some other religious tonalities and religious figures mentioned later in the episode. That's why I say this. And we see Jean and Logan kiss. And Logan has to kind of hold back a little bit because he also knows that Jean's dealing with memory issues. And he definitely has feelings for her, but, you know, he doesn't want to step on what is a very tumultuous relationship between the real Jean and Scott, right? We see Scott dealing with these feelings. We even see Scott have a very volatile reaction to a reporter that asks him a question about his son. Because we know in previous episodes, he had to send his son Nathan Christopher Summers into the future because of an illness. And Scott kind of loses his cool and said, you know, this doctor called my kid a freak and wouldn't deliver my baby. And this reporter, who, would you be honest, is white and American and, you know, pretty, is kind of sidebarring to Scott, hey, I'm trying to show equality here. And Scott gets upset. He's like, you and I are nothing alike. Thank God. Because if we were, you know, none of us would help anyone. And, you know, Scott's trying to say that all that the X-Men have done is help people who have persecuted and hated and feared them. Right? Imagine basically a marginalized community defending and protecting those who are marginalizing them. And then being asked by a reporter, hey, I'm trying to help you out here. We're trying to play up the equality levels, not really talk about these differences. It's very tone deaf, right? It's almost like glazing over history, which, you know, is happening around the country and world. Well, we don't want to talk about uncomfortable things. And this episode gets into the uncomfortable. It seriously does. But before we get there, let's talk about the Genosian Council. So, in the Council, we see a number of characters that, yes, were from the original 97 series. We see Sean Cassidy as, you know, Banshee, an Irish character. We see his girlfriend, or maybe wife at this time, Moira McTaggart, a human who's on the Council. We see Callisto. Remember I mentioned her from the intro? And then we see some nefarious characters who you may think of as nefarious if you saw the original series. But to remind you all, we see some Hellfire Club members. So the Hellfire Club was this organization of mutants who kind of wanted to dominate humanity through subversive and often financial control, right? Kind of like a hidden hand, like the mafia, kind of. Leader of this is Sebastian Shaw, guy with the mutton chops, and his major domo, Emma Frost, who's a psychic mutant. And these people are trying to convince Magneto to be a chancellor, or kind of ruler, of Genosha. Because right now they have a council, they don't have a president, they don't have a prime minister. And this is very tempting for Magneto, because he's always been someone who has wanted to rule, has wanted the spotlight. But now he's kind of hesitant, right? And he is talking to Rogue, and he's having monologue with himself about this chancellorship, and about if this is in line with Xavier's dream of cohabitation. Is it? It's hard to say, right? He asks Rogue to essentially be his quote-unquote queen as a co-chancellor, which would mean that she would have to decide to be with him and not be with Remy. Ooh, love triangle. And as you see in the show and in previous episodes, she can touch physically Magneto, so they can be intimate without that barrier. And this is brought up, you know, when Rogue divulges kind of open kimono to Remy about her past with the Brotherhood of Mutants. So again, this is huge. It was mentioned in the 97 comics, but really wasn't shown. And so you get to see a younger Magneto and other members of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, or the Brotherhood of Mutants, depending, and how that formulated her young adulthood. You know, was she taken advantage of by Magneto? Who can say? Maybe their connection was mutual. Maybe he was preying on her vulnerability, since he could negate her powers and they could come into physical contact, right? We see Magneto developing a language in this flashback. Now, in the comics currently, the language being developed is called Krakoan, which was a language developed by Marvel comic authors and writers as unique language for mutants. So that's kind of an Easter egg there, right? And we see Rogue kind of hint that maybe she'd have to choose Magneto over Remy because of this newfound potential responsibility. Now, this is the part of the episode where I started to feel very concerned, because they mention a gala. And in the comics, there was recently the Hellfire Gala, which didn't end very well for a lot of the mutants that attended the gala. And if you read the comics, you know what happens in Genosha, right? What does that word look like to you? Genocide? It's a word that's being thrown around a lot around the world today. And the show writers did not shy away from this. So, again, something is going to happen, and we can unpack this a little bit. We get some semblance of normality and some semblance of grandiosity with a party at this gala, and everyone is dressed up fancy. We see Rogue in this beautiful gown coming in flying, and Magneto flies up to kind of glide with her in this very beautiful moment. We see other members of the council there, all dressed to the nines. We see Nightcrawler dancing with both men and women. Very, very cool choice. I like that. Maybe pansexual even? Who knows? They don't really explore Nightcrawler's unique sexuality in the comics, but maybe there's a hint here that he doesn't really have to choose. Maybe he's like Loki, right? A pansexual. Very interesting. And so we have like a festive party, and they start playing Happy Nation. So the song Happy Nation was a song recorded by Ace of Base on their debut album. And it was a reaction in many ways to these elements in the Swedish culture that were challenging some of the progressive movements in Sweden to be a more pluralistic or ethnically diverse place. And so she was talking about some of Sweden's neo-Nazi past and fascist history. You know, that was what the song was about, and it was put out in early 90s, I believe 1992. So it was a very interesting song because it was happy music, you know, reggae, you know, very light music with lyrics that were very, very sincere and pointed, right? And so it deals with all these issues. And in the music video that they develop for that Ace of Base song, it's talking about different religions, different ideas, and how these ideas are causing a conflict in our world, and how people are fighting over these ideas, you know, though trying to live in a quote-unquote happy nation. So, you know, there's a lot to unpack there, and I think it was very wise of the showrunners to use that song. And very, let's just say, thematically appropriate for what was coming. And I knew what was going to happen. I mean, this was one of the hardest moments in the comics, the decimation of Genosha by an Alpha Sentinel. And I didn't think they were going to do this so early in the show, in the, you know, new episodes of the season. But my God, did they go there? It's not easy to watch. It harkens on what's going on around the world in many places, but namely in Gaza, where people are being attacked and bombarded by technology because of a conflict between nations. And in this scenario with Genosha, we don't know who is sending the Sentinels. All we know is that they are a far advanced military capability targeting a nation that has no weapons. Like, the Genosians had no self-defense. There was nothing in Genosha that could have prevented the Sentinels from just decimating and massacring all these men, women, and children. Absolutely nothing. And their powers and their strength as individuals could do nothing to stop the onslaught. And just like in the comic, when this occurred, the mutant massacre, everyone was wiped out. The whole island of Genosha was just decimated. And they really portrayed it very well in this show. I was very hit by this. I literally cried my eyes out, and I had to leave the room. I had to go driving around town just to clear my head because of how this made me feel about what's going on in our world and how people are dying due to military onslaught. And it's, you know, to be released on a major festival for a very large population of the world who celebrate a religion and keep a faith that has been shaken in recent months due to what happened on October 7th on both sides. It's very hard to watch. I have no idea if the showrunners planned this. They probably didn't. They must have had to produce this a year ago. So, kind of like Dune Part 2, in certain scenes, this I think is going to hit a lot of people in a very real way. I thought it was timely. I thought it was appropriate. And it was 100% comic accurate. You know, I thought Nightcrawler was going to get killed when he did the save for Magneto and Rogue and teleported them out of harm's way. He was injured. He was alive. In that moment, I was like, well, someone's going to die, right? And you guys kind of know where this goes. Magneto is seemingly found saving the Morlocks because he gave Leech, the little green Morlock, a promise that you shouldn't fear. And there's this huge fight between the Alpha Sentinel, the Omega Sentinel, and all these other Sentinels, and Magneto's holding this blast back, and he says to the young child, and this made me cry, "Hab keine Angst," which is German for "don't be afraid." Now, we have to understand that Magneto, Eric, was a victim of the Holocaust as a child. He was German, speaking, and ethnically a part of the Ashkenazi Jewish culture. So that language, German, was the language of his birth. And for him to say in German, "Hab keine Angst," do not be afraid, to this young boy who facing death, oh my God, I got so moved. You know, and then, you know, Rogue getting decimated, all the X-Men being knocked out, and then Rogue seemingly Magneto dying, goes into a blind rage and just charges the Sentinel, and Remy does his thing and saves the day, but at the cost of his own life, kind of going out like Superman when Superman was fighting Doomsday and just sacrifices himself to save as many people as possible. It was absolutely moving and tragic. It was so heartbreaking to see that. And you know, as you can see in the show, Rogue is holding Remy and just saying, "I can't feel you. I can't feel you anymore." Oh my gosh. You know, and prior to this, tells Magneto that they're not going to end up together at the gala. She does this when they're doing the floaty thing. So you know that she wanted to be with Remy in the end. And Remy sacrifices his life to save not only hers, but everyone else. And it's just, oh my gosh. And then again, the episode's end at the Xavier Mansion with all the X-Men watching on TV the absolute genocide of the Genosians, the genocide of these mutants, of these people who had no choice but to live on this island nation so that they could have some semblance of security. And yet still, they were eradicated like bugs. I mean, if that doesn't hit you, if that doesn't strike your heartstrings, I don't know what does. But it definitely got me. And I think People are going to have to unpack this episode. People are going to have to talk about it. People are going to have to ask themselves questions about how they feel about this. There is a lot going on. But I think I have to applaud Marvel Studios for going there, for not sugarcoating it, for not painting it over. This is a real concern for many marginalized groups, that if you find a place that's safe, it'll become a target. And they went there. You know, it's just, it's very hard to deal with this. And it's very impactful and very honest. And I think this is probably one of the best animations I've ever seen from a story narrative perspective in such a short period of time. This episode did to me what Grave of the Fireflies did to me in an entire film, which is a Studio Ghibli film, a really early Miyazaki film. But my God, did this episode have an impact. I think anyone that watches this episode and comes away with this without crying, or at least sitting back and saying, wow, I mean, you're just not human. So my applause, seriously, everyone at Marvel Studios, I'd give you a hug, I'd give you a handshake, I'd cry with you. This was so needed and so necessary to help people understand why these stories were so important to so many people for so many years. And I just have to applaud you. So with that, I'm going to wrap things up. There's so much. I need to watch this a couple of times over. I'd even love to have a conversation with a friend just on this episode alone and how this made you feel. So check out our other episodes. Keep listening every week. I'm going to put out a new episode as soon as I see it. And we're going to get through this together here. Let's another hug. Another hug. We need it. We need it. All right. Until next time, keep it classic.